And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. Hi, my name is Dr. Roy Morgan. Did I mention this is Health Essentials? Okay, sorry about that. Okay, the number here at the station is 903-586-5257. I'm so fascinated by God's creation. Sometimes it's really overwhelming when you start to tackle it, but the one thing that I think everybody wants is they want to make sure that their brain stays in great working order over the course of a lifetime. How does that benefit a person to make it all the way to age 58 just to experience dementia, Alzheimer's, or some other unusual cognitive decline, or let's just say that you lose neurological function? Well, when you eat meat, or if you have seafood, if I'm not mistaken, it's been shown that that is actually a source of a substance called creatine. Have you ever heard of creatine before? I came across an article that just really piqued my interest, and so I copied three more articles. And so if I can, let me kind of give you some information about creatine. And I think somewhere in this research, or this information I'm going to share with you this morning, surely you can find some thing that you can extract or extrapolate from this that would be very beneficial to you. And if it doesn't directly benefit you, then you've got to know at least 25 people. I'm probably thinking of hundreds of people, if not thousands, just in the surrounding area that would really benefit from this information. This article, and what I'll do is I'm trying to be as true as I can. Let me see, where does this one come from? Well, hang on, let me just share the article with you, and I'll try to flesh out the source, just in case you want to look it up for yourself. Okay, the abstract is just real simple. Creatine extends the lifespan of mice. And, of course, what I'm into is I want to look for the key phrase or the idea that it extends the healthy lifespan. What does it mean if you extend a person's lifespan, if that just means they're paralyzed in a bed for an additional 10 years in a nursing home facility? Well, no, that's not what you want. What you want is you want to be able to function and to move and to breathe and think and do, and in the case of a mouse, maybe reproduce, enjoy themselves, have an interesting life, develop hobbies, whatever hobbies a mouse might develop. Okay, it says creatine extends the healthy lifespan of mice by 10%. This is according to researchers at the German National Research Center for Environment and Health in Neurobiology of Aging. Here's a study right here. The researchers fed one-year-old mice a diet that contained 1% creatine. So you get that? That's all they did was, their food was 1% creatine. For all I know, that means it was exactly 99% Purina rat chow, okay? A control group was given normal food. That means there was no creatine in it. The researchers then noted the age the mice reached. Mice normally live to be about 2 years old. And here's the graph right here. You can't see the graph, but it says you can see the effect of creatine on lifespan of the animals. I'll just tell you, it's pretty impressive. It's significantly better. It says here that the researchers used female mice for their experiment. Female mice age less quickly than male ones. And I'd say that's true for human beings also. I mean, who has a longer lifespan usually? That's usually a woman. Who usually dies before the woman does? That would be the man. Those are really the only options you have. The researchers expect that they therefore obtained a greater effect than they would have done if they used male animals. So it was only done on female mice, so hopefully that's not a problem. But here's the math on this right here. The healthy lifespan increased by, they say, 10% in those that received a creatine supplement. The mice in the control group had an average of 563 healthy days of their life, whereas the mice in the creatine group had 613. Now, when I do the math on that, because I'm using Randy's calculator that he keeps here in the station on the control board, and I come up with 10.8%. Now, I know this is just my simple way of thinking of it, but what if you had a full life where you were very healthy right up until the age of 70? Well, by the age of 70, what if everything fell to pieces and your health deteriorated rather rapidly and you went downhill and you just passed away and you're no longer walking the earth? Well, you tell me, what do you want to do here? In this study on mice, they lived 10.8% longer. So instead of dying at age 70, what if, and I realize there's a lot of what ifs on this, what if you could have 77 years that you could do all sorts of things that would live a life that honors God, and that you would live a life that glorifies God, and you could be more productive, and you could actually help change lives for the better? Okay, 10% is pretty impressive. The researchers got the idea for the experiment after promising animal studies, and this is another good point right here, which were carried out where they used creatine when they induced Parkinson's and Huntington's disease. And so the lives of mice that have Huntington's, which is a brain neurological disease, and Parkinson's, they did better with creatine. And so they wondered whether creatine would also protect the brains of healthy mice against aging. That means they're referring to experimenting on healthy mice that have no neurological problems like Parkinson's or Huntington's. This is the good part to me also, because this is the sort of thing that you probably, we just have to deal with this every single day. If we don't understand this, then how do you target how you're going to help a person get well? When brains, and basically not only brains, but when the brains age, the amount of an aging pigment that's called lipofuscin in the brain tissue, it increases. Okay, are you with me? Therefore, one of the best markers for aging is just measuring what's called lipofuscin. The Germans discovered that the hippocampus of the mice in the creatine group contained much less lipofuscin. And I'm looking at the graph. You can't see that, but it's really significant. It looks like it's at least a third less. It's got to be. I'm looking at the graph. The hippocampus is one important structure that's in the midline of the brain, because it's kind of where short-term memory takes place. So if there was an individual that's suffering from some degree of short-term memory loss, you know what I mean by that, don't you? A person can remember what happened back in 1950. They could give you details of what it was like to go to high school. They could tell you all about their 57 Chevy. But when it comes to short-term memory, they might repeat themselves over and over again. So every 3 minutes, they may make the same exact comment. And they absolutely have no memory or recollection of what they said 3 minutes earlier or 5 minutes earlier. So the hippocampus consists of delicate tissue that plays an important role in recording new information. Or, like I told you, it has an awful lot to do with what's called short-term memory. And so maybe a different way of saying this is, if a person has Alzheimer's or if they have dementia, this is directly a hippocampus problem. It really is. The hippocampus is also part of the limbic system. That, what does that have to do with? Well, it's one of the ways that your body deals with emotions or processes emotions. So if you've ever known someone that's had Alzheimer's, yeah, their emotions can be very challenging and difficult at times. If I'm not mistaken, the way that they diagnose medically, if somebody has Alzheimer's, is they will do an imaging test called an MRI. That stands for magnetic resonance imaging. It doesn't use an X-ray like a CAT scan does. It just puts them in a giant magnet and really lines up all the electrons so they can image that way. But they notice when somebody has Alzheimer's, there is significant, if you want to call it shrinkage, if you want to call it shriveling, I think the correct term is atrophy. That means it's just wasting away. But when there's a significant 18 to 19 to 20% loss at the hippocampus compared to other people in the same age that don't have that shrinkage, then they go, bingo, you have a diagnosis of Alzheimer's. And you know as well as I do, there's really not, I mean, I've watched a lot of people over the last four decades take one pharmaceutical drug after the other for cognition or for memory. I don't think I've seen one work yet. Now, I'm not trying to be critical. I'm just telling you my observation. If you have a much different experience where you've taken pharmaceutical drugs to prevent memory loss, then let me know what it is, because I haven't discovered it yet, but I'm open to it. So if you call me and tell me there's a new drug that works better than anything else that's ever been created, let me know so I can read about it and study it and find out what happens. The other thing that I always have to think about is, yes, there's drugs, and it's one thing to make a drug claim, but it's another thing to have a drug that doesn't have really horrific side effects. I won't even tell you about the three or four situations this week where individuals that came to see me were talking about the horrible, horrific side effects of just taking a drug. And I think two of them said, if I had known that it was going to be this bad, I would have never taken it. And I said, well, did they give you full disclosure and say this is a potential side effect? They said, no. Anyway, the hippocampus consists of delicate tissue that plays an important role in recording new information. So, you know what I'm getting to here is, we want to make sure that your hippocampus is very healthy. You don't want it dying prematurely. The effect may explain why the mice in the creatine group, they had a better memory in old age than mice in the control group. Now, this, I did not read the part of the study where it explained how they did that, but I'm going to take the researchers at their word. The elderly creatine mice, they were also physically more active, and they seemed to become more familiar with their surroundings more quickly when the researchers placed them in a new cage. It's almost like moving an elderly person from their home to a different facility. I know. So here's the conclusion right here. And the other reason I'm reading this to you is I don't always read these words, but this is what it says. The researchers are enthusiastic about their study. You know how many studies I've read where the researchers were not enthusiastic? Quite a few, because they were very disappointed by the outcome. But this one is really positive. I'm going to quote the researcher here. As there are no real safety concerns, and they're referring to creatine, creatine might have the potential to contribute to healthy human aging, they conclude. If you want to look that article up, here's the study right here. Neurobiology, Aging, 2008, September 29th, pages 1,404 to 411. So here's what you got with creatine. Better energy production. Do you need that? Yes. That's one of the important keys that we can never look beyond. You've got to have energy to make everything work right. So if you get home from work at 5 o'clock and your brain is fried and you can't do anything with it the rest of the evening until you collapse in bed, then we have a serious problem. That's not going to play out well unless we deal with it. The other thing that creatine did in the study was it was better functioning of the brain cells. Do you know that healthy aging of the brain is a lot better than the exact opposite, which is premature aging and mental decline? You don't want that. Okay, that's study number one right there. Study number two. This is the one that caught my attention. There's two more, but anyway, creatine supplementation improves memory in 2 weeks, and I thought, excuse me? 2 weeks? That's all it took? Okay, here you go. It says if you suffer from normal and mild forms of memory loss, then you might benefit from supplementation with creatine. Creatine, which is available basically everywhere, and it's dirt cheap, it is best known as a supplement for bodybuilders. But It also stimulates the functioning of brain cells involved in memory functions. This is evident from a human study published by a British scientist at the University of Chichester, or Chichester, I think it's Chichester, or anyway, 2007. I know, you know, and this is the first time I've read this article right here, but it's back in 2007. So does that tell you this is like not brand new, 16 years old, give or take? It was published in Aging, Neuropsychology, and Cognition. Here's a study right here. And I kind of think this is interesting also. The researchers divided 32 subjects with an average age of 76 into two groups. For 2 weeks, one group took four doses of 5 grams of creatine daily. So I'm telling you what they gave them. For 2 weeks, one group, this is the one that got the creatine, they took four doses of 5 grams of creatine daily. So I guess that boils down to 20 grams of creatine a day. The subjects on the other group, which was the placebo group, and they just got a placebo. Maybe it was a sugar pill, but it wasn't creatine. After 1 and 2 weeks of supplementation, the subjects were showed 10 photos of persons that had some indication of a particular profession that they had. And I couldn't find this, but most likely, if they took a picture of a firefighter, you'd say, what profession is this person right here? And they'd say, well, obviously, he's a firefighter. Or if they took a picture of like a taxi cab driver standing by his car. I mean, you get the idea. The photographs that the subjects had seen before were included. I'm sorry. An hour later, the researchers gave the subjects 20 photos. The photographs that the subjects had seen before were included, and the subjects were asked to designate them. For each photo that the subjects could identify, they got 1 point. If they knew what the profession of the person was in the photo, they got 1 point extra. Okay? So you can't look at the graph right here, but it's phenomenal. It said after 2 weeks, the subjects in the creatine group scored much higher than the subjects in the placebo group. I'm looking at the graph. I know you can't see that, but it's like really, really significant. Okay, now this is the part that I'm interested in. I always like knowing the mechanism. How does something work? And so I'm going to explain that to you, and hopefully this will tell you everything that you need just to prayerfully and thoughtfully consider this. The explanation for our data so far proposed has assumed that the effect of creatine supplementation is to make ATP resynthesis more efficient. And that's basically, how do we efficiently produce energy? And just remember, energy is the currency of the brain and the body and everything else. The researchers write, there is no doubt that elderly people require more energy. And you know what? If you haven't heard that before, you need to hear it right now. If you're aging, and you are, you need more energy, not less. And what do you need the energy for? In order that you can just carry out basic cognitive tasks. So if you're younger, it comes much easier because your machinery is pretty doggone clean. And here's another explanation right here. An alternative explanation is provided by the claim that the positive effects of creatine supplementation are due to the fact that in the presence of creatine, it improves what's called mitochondrial membrane stimulation. What does that mean to you? More brain energy. That's the opposite of being brain dead. I meant that metaphorically. I don't mean not alive. Okay, the other one's right here. It says it particularly increases uptake of, it says it's neuroprotective in several chemicals in the brain, particularly dopamine and glutamate. Research with individuals that have Parkinson's disease has shown that creatine supplementation has resulted in increased concentrations of dopamine. Well, guess what you get with dopamine? You get ambition, you get drive, you get motivation. You start having more want to. You want to be around other people. You like to socialize. That's good. Isn't it interesting that creatine does that, or it helps? Okay, what else do I want to read about this? You know what? Going backwards, this study was only 2 weeks. What if they had done it for 12 weeks? That's so interesting to me. Okay, study number 3 this morning. This is the one that really caught my attention before I started off on this topic. This was yesterday evening, I don't know, 7 o'clock or so. But even if this does not apply to you, I know that you've heard stories or you know somebody. It could be a family member. It could be a friend from church where they really, really struggle with depression. So just listen to this for a moment. Supplementation with 5-HTP, that's a nutritional supplement. That's basically when you take that, it makes it easier for your body to make serotonin. Supplementation with 5-HTP and creatine, that's our topic. It dispels stubborn depression. In the abstract, it says if people with depression, they don't respond to regular medication, and you know what the medications are, they're called selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors or norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors. What they're doing is they're looking at people that are very resistant to treatment with drugs, meaning they just don't see any progress. And what they're looking at is they're only looking at women, but they're trying, how about if we give them just a small amount of 5-HTP and just a smidgen of creatine? And the other thing that I like about this is they're not using astronomical doses. Excuse me, those really aren't necessary. Here's a study right here. In 2017, that wasn't that long ago, Brent Kios, a psychiatrist at the University of Utah, he published a small experimental study in the Journal of Clinical Psychopharmacology. Psychopharmacology. Sorry, I butchered that one. And it included 15 depressed women as subjects. The women in the study, they had been taking regular antidepressants such as selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors and norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors for at least 8 weeks. But they had nothing to show. There was no positive response by taking these pharmaceuticals. So Dr. Kios and his colleagues combined this medication with supplementation. So they got no results from the drugs, but they said, okay, here's what we're going to do. They gave women 100 milligrams of 5-HTP, and they gave them 5 grams of creatine daily, in addition to their medication for 12 weeks. That's what they did. Okay? That study that I just read, they gave about 20 grams of creatine a day, and they got really good results with improving the memory in just 2 weeks. And so after supplementation with the combination of 5-HTP and creatine was started, the subject's depression scores plummeted. I'm liking this. The average subject's Hamilton rating scale of depression, that's called the HAM-D questionnaire, they dropped from 18, which means almost severe depression. And they say that's somewhere between moderate and severe depression, but I'm looking at it. And what they did was they went from 18 to 8 over 12 weeks. I'm looking at the scale. I mean, it's like really significant. And the researchers say the study took 12 weeks, you know, that's 3 months, which took too short to get a good picture of the side effects, which I'm still trying to look up studies showing very significant side effects from taking creatine. I just really haven't found them yet. But I'm open. You know, you're dealing with human beings. Everybody's wired just a little bit differently. So what one person might be able to take, another one may not be so tolerant of. So I'm open to that idea. So as far as they can see now, any side effects they may have had from the 5-HTP and the creatine are really minor. Nevertheless, the researcher argued for longer and larger follow-up research to fill in this gap of knowledge because they wanted to know. That comes from Journal Clinical Psychopharmacology, 2017, October, volume 37, pages 578 to 583. One of the articles right here I did not copy off. But I'm going to. I just didn't get around to it. They say that inositol, which is a B vitamin-like compound, this is the title of the article, it alleviates severe depression. That's amazing. I'm looking at the clock, and I'm thinking maybe I should take some phone calls. Good morning, and welcome to the program.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, thank you. Thank you so much for your phone call.
It's a great day, and I thank you for talking to us about the creatine and the 5-HTP. How can we get those naturally?
Well, creatine naturally is going to occur when you eat seafood. So if you've ever had the idea that when you eat seafood, you just feel mentally and emotionally better and your mind's more clear, well, maybe okay. We know now why that is, because it's got some creatine.
Okay.
The issue, and I probably did not flesh this out real well, that as human beings age, their bodies just don't produce the energy that they used to. So if I compared like a six-year-old, I actually could probably say a two- or three-year-old, right, with a 75-year-old, which one is going to have the most amazing amounts of energy? So that would be a case for if you wanted to. I realize this doesn't directly answer your question, but if you wanted to, you could actually just purchase creatine and take it if you wanted to. But it's mainly found in stuff like red meat and seafood.
Okay. And the 5-HTP?
Well, 5-HTP is going to be kind of a man-designed substance to try to imitate tryptophan, because there's a rule, according to the Food and Drug Administration, you can't give doses of tryptophan. That's one amino acid that they don't allow to be sold. You know how you could go to the health food store and you could buy, like, L-lysine? Well, you can't,
right.
You can't buy L-tryptophan, so the way that they try to get around that or get under the radar is to sell a substance called 5-HTP. But when you eat stuff like, let me say, for example, when you eat turkey, a turkey is known to be very high in what's called tryptophan. And so I think, if I'm not mistaken, they've actually done experiments where they give women turkey for breakfast, a significant amount of it, like just turkey breast meat, and they actually do better. So if you want to eat it, turkey would be one source.
Okay, great. Thank you. And now let me get back to the real reasons for my call. And I've got a question I've been meaning to ask you a long time. Do you still operate in your original profession as?
Yeah, well, I do for my patients, but I don't take patients for chiropractic, just strictly chiropractic. I don't.
Right.
But I can't do it for Medicare age either, because I'm not a Medicare provider.
Right. Well, I've been to you before. Okay, the reasons for me calling...
Yeah, I couldn't figure out who this was a while ago, but now I know. I'm just joking.
Uh-oh. Okay.
You're the super good-looking guy with wavy, curly hair.
Well, I do have some curls.
You look like Shirley Temple when you let it grow out.
Oh, yeah?
No, I'm just joking.
I like jokes. I have two problems that are minor, but they kind of get into me sometimes. I'm a minister, and as I go out and I preach, often I get to coughing, and the thing that I do to keep me from coughing is I put a cough drop in my mouth, just a
Could it be like a throat lozenge or something like that?
Yes. Okay. And then also another problem I've got that might be related is as I go from one temperature of the air to another temperature, or right now I had my arm on the computer, my puppy dog is on my lap and kind of has my other arm, but as I change temperatures, such as I put my arm on that cold computer briefly, that sort of thing, and I changed the temperatures from air conditioning to non-air conditioning, or from heated to non-heated air going in and outside, I have to sneeze often, two or three times. I'm thinking those problems might be related, and I'm trying to figure out what I can do.
Well, and
what can I do?
Okay, well, you're asking a very good question, but let me say it a different way. What you want is you want your body to, a healthy response on every level is being able to adapt, right?
Yes.
And so let me give you an example. If you're laying in the bed and you say, hey, I'm going to stand up. Well, in order to do that, your body must adapt, meaning it's got to increase blood pressure just a little bit and get the heart to pump a little bit harder, because what would happen if you just popped up and all the blood rushed from your brain? Well, you'd like pass out and drop to the floor. Who wants to wake up at 2 in the morning to go to the bathroom and go, oh my goodness, I'm so dizzy, I crashed, I hit my head on the countertop. You don't want to do that. So adaptation is what makes us very interesting human beings, being able to adapt. And so if you do something different or out of the norm and it causes a symptom, that means your body's not as adapting as well as it should. And so if whether there's a temperature change or a barometric pressure change, it evokes sneezing. One of the organ systems I think of is the liver. And the liver is one of the most interesting filtration systems of the body, very sophisticated. And so your liver is constantly monitoring the quality of the blood and all the fluids of the body, trying to make sure that you're in great working order. So if you sneeze with a temperature change, that usually makes me think there's something going on with the liver. Have you ever donated blood before?
I do real regular, and I think it's next week is my coming up time, next eligible time.
How, if I asked you to rate your energy levels on a scale of 0, meaning I don't have any energy whatsoever, and 10, I feel super fabulous all the time, where would you rate your energy?
I'd say 6 to 7.
So there's room for improvement. So if you're operating somewhere between 60 to 70%, we want to find a way to improve that. And I know I'm making this sound simple, but if you don't improve your energy levels, it makes it really hard for the body to heal and repair itself. And so that's kind of why I started off on the topic of creatine as a supplement. You could try that easily. The other thing that I would look at, there's a type of a seed called black cumin seed. You ever heard of that?
No, I haven't.
Well, I like it because a lot of times when people take it, a lot of these issues of inflammation in the liver and allergies starts to go away. I'm not trying to overpromise. I think I'm pretty balanced about this stuff. I'm not up here trying to hawk products all day long saying, hey, this is super miracle water. Buy it from me today. You'll have a miracle. That's not what I'm saying. But black cumin seed is a very unusual balance of fatty acids. But there are studies after studies showing it helps balance the body. The other thing is, if you have diabetes, you've got to embrace the idea of fasting just so your body can clean out and you can reset your energy production, your metabolism, because that's where the prize is really great.
I often skip breakfast.
Well, and what I'm referring to, probably referring to at least a minimum of 24 hours, but probably better 36 to 42.
Okay.
You're just trying to tap into how do we get the body, how do we get the liver to clear all this stuff out and help get us to a better place? Do you take any medications at all?
None. I haven't taken any in over a year. Supplements, but no medications.
Well, you can work on these things right here and see if the cough goes away. Because if you fast for 36 hours, it may be that you go, hey, Dr. Morgan, guess what? My cough's gone. Because if you don't eat for 36 hours, your body's going to start looking for all the debris in your system, even your lungs, to get rid of. It's going to clear it out. That's an idea. So
That's a couple of great ideas, and I thank you very,
okay,
very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for your phone call today.
God bless you.
Oh, thank you. God bless you, buddy. Bye-bye. Could you imagine what would happen if God removed all his grace from the universe, it would be instantly game over. So thankful that God is gracious and kind to us. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm great, thank you. Thanks for your phone call.
Thank you. I had heard you say in the past that you had helped a lady that had low kidney function, and that's what I'm interested in. I have heart failure, and also am beginning to have some kidney function problems, and I wanted to know what foods I could eat or whatever it was that you were talking about, the lady that, you know, that you helped out. What I should be eating to help increase the kidney function.
I think that lady probably represents like 3,000 people over 34 years.
Okay.
So it's not a one-off isolated. So there's principles at play here, and we have to follow them. So let me just give you some ideas. They may not be in perfect order, but what we want to do is you want to create an environment that makes it much easier for your body to rejuvenate and repair the kidneys. So one thing that you can do right now is you can start taking a little bit of baking soda, stir it in a little bit of water, and drink it every morning. Can you do that?
Baking soda, okay.
And an easy dose would be 1/2 teaspoon. Now, I don't have a laptop computer up here at the radio station, but if I did, I could type in studies on baking soda preventing the kidneys from getting worse, and you'd probably find 3 or 4 in about 1 nanosecond. And you would say, this is interesting. How come nobody's told me this? Well, I mean, I told you that. But so if you want to keep your kidneys from getting worse, start taking a little bit of baking soda. It's very soothing and beneficial to the kidneys. But I have found baking soda is really, really good.
Okay,
number two. Out of all the things that we could eat or consume, guess what is absolutely the hardest on the kidneys? There's nothing harder.
Probably soda or...
That's it. So sugar and soda. When I say soda, I don't mean baking soda. I mean a soda water like a Pepsi, something like that. They just, if you want to just suck the life force out of your kidneys, well, drinking soft drinks is a surefire way to do that, or liquid sugar.
Okay.
And so one of the ways that you could replace that, make it easy on the kidneys. So if you need something sweet, how about a bowl of strawberries?
Okay.
That'd be horrible for somebody to bring you a bowl of strawberries on a silver platter, wouldn't it?
Well, my great-grandson loves them, so we eat them definitely on Mondays and so.
All right. No, hey, that's a good routine. He's got something to look forward to. He's going to say, hey, where's my bowl of strawberries?
Yes.
Okay, so avoiding sugar is just so essential. I do believe, and of course, I don't know anything about your kidneys. Did they do a blood test called GFR that stands for glomerular filtration rate?
Yeah, they've done so many, because being that I have heart failure, I have all those tests run, periodically.
Well, one thing is to get you out of heart failure. So let me talk about number three. If I told you there was a study from the Journal of Occupational Therapy, 2012. But they demonstrated that when they could convince people to walk barefoot on the dirt, on the grass, on the concrete, on the tile, kidney function improved. Now, I'm not telling you that I completely logically understand that, but in the study, they could across the board get an incremental significant statistical improvement of kidney function just by walking barefoot. You think you could do that?
Okay. How long a day?
Well, I'd say as much as you can, but I'd say the starting point's got to be somewhere around 20 to 30 minutes. So if you said, I'm just going to walk around the yard, I'm going to pick up sticks, I'm going to trim weeds or pull weeds, that might be one way of doing it.
Right. Walking around in the house is not going to count. It's going to need to be out in the grass or something, right?
Well, I think it does count a little bit in the house, but the very best results I've ever seen is if you put your bare foot on the earth.
Right, okay.
And since today's Earth Day, you have no choice but to do that.
All right, no problem.
Okay, number four. There is an element in nature that's known as magnesium. Unless you require me to go into great detail, I'm just going to say that magnesium plays a role and helping to protect the kidneys from harm and damage.
Okay.
Maybe.
How much of that?
Well, depending on the magnesium that you find, just follow the manufacturer's recommendations. I don't mind telling you, I am not a fan of magnesium oxide. I don't think that's a great form. If you use something more like magnesium lactate or magnesium glycinate, those are probably going to be better equipped to working with your own natural kidney cells.
Okay.
Okay. Number next.
Okay.
I really appreciate you telling me what's going on here, but one of the problems with congestive heart failure is you just don't pump enough blood with enough strength and efficiency through the kidneys so they can do their job. So you're trying
to... See, I've had ejection fraction as low as 10. We've made progress up to 35 to 40% is what my ejection fraction is now. I've had several surgeries, and, of course, I'm on lots of different medications for it. But it's been tough for since about 2017, I guess, is when I've had, you know, they found out I had all these heart problems.
Do you like to drink herbal tea?
I haven't in a long time, but it, you know, it doesn't. You know,
well,
I'm not,
let me suggest a couple. There's one called Rose Hips. Historically, that's very gentle and good for the kidneys. I think it tastes good. And there's another one called Hibiscus. And you can decide if you like hibiscus tea, and I don't care how you drink it. You can drink it warm or room temperature on ice.
Okay, and that shouldn't react to any kind of medication?
Yeah, but I think it's funny you should ask that question, because the exact opposite is what takes place. It's all the medications that react to all the other stuff. It's not herbal tea.
Well,
I get where you're coming from. You're going, I'm kind of worried and scared that if I sip on water, that might cause a drug reaction. No, it's the drugs, baby. But you need it's not, yeah, and I get where you're coming from on that, but as far as I know, I have never heard of a human being rushed to the hospital with a drug reaction from sipping on Rose Hips tea.
Okay.
I know that's probably hard to believe. I just haven't heard of it. I think I've heard of everything, but I haven't heard of that. Yeah, I'm going to do a literature search. What now?
The doctors are always, you know.
Of course they are.
Don't be.
Oh, that's right. I know. How dare you do anything different than what we're telling you?
Exactly.
Are you kidding me? You can't do anything without my permission. Are you going to eat a piece of dark chocolate? Not without my permission, you're not. It's just ridiculous. So, I mean, I want you to be smart about this. I'm not trying to slam anybody. But if all we do is have an idea that drugs are the solution for everything, let me ask you a question. Have you looked at the numbers of how many Americans had heart disease back in 1950 versus the year 2022? So if they've done such a great job with pharmaceuticals, why is it exploding through the roof high?
Yeah, right, going the wrong direction.
I would say so. Yeah. All I'm saying is it's okay to question these things. And I realize there's a lot of moving parts with this. It's not just the drugs. But I'm just thinking to myself, do drugs actually cure or fix anything? Well, the one example I might give, if you told me you had projectile diarrhea, you might take Pepto-Bismol to get over it, or Imodium AD, and then you go, okay, I got through that. My body's self-corrected. It's healed. But when it comes to congestive heart failure, yeah, I want your ejection fraction to go from 40%. I want it to go up to 58, 60.
Now, that would really be nice.
Well, you know what would happen if it did? You wouldn't need all those medications, because your heart is doing its job on its own. So if I told you, probably you need to have animal protein just one time a day.
Okay.
I don't know exactly what your weight is, but with congestive heart failure, fasting
is... Well, that was the next thing I was going to say. I need to lose 75 pounds.
Well, if you try fasting, that is the most efficient technology that I know of. It does not cost a penny, and it just requires discipline and a good mindset. But, you know, even if you didn't know anything about it, you could go onto YouTube today and you could type in, what's the scientific approach to fasting for healing the body? Because the bottom line is you've got to make it easy on the heart and the kidneys to heal, and if you fast, your body will go straight into the mode of autophagy. it's going to remove all the damaged tissue and all the damaged debris and toxins from your kidneys and your heart and clean them up.
Okay.
So that's free. Now, obviously, it's a lot of experimentation. I don't know how you're going to feel exactly. I really don't know anything about you, but you're taking lots of medications, aren't you?
Yes, sir, I am. They put me on Jardiance, even though I do not have diabetes, but that's supposed to be for
my
heart.
Well, but, okay, whatever. I'm not saying that to you. I'm just saying whatever to that idea. Well, what if you shed 75 pounds? See, if you lost between, can I just make up some numbers here? What if you did this very safely and very gently and you lost 8 pounds a month? How long is that going to take you to shed 75 pounds of non-essential tissue that's just generating inflammation? It's not going to take that long.
No, just a little over 9 months.
Yeah, that's it. You're very good at math. So there's an end in sight, but what I would recommend is you've got to eat in such a way that you make it easy for the body to repair itself. What do you think about eating salads? Can you do that, or do they have you on blood thinners?
Well, I do take a blood thinner, Eliquis, but...
Have they told you not to eat salads?
No. Mm-mm.
Okay. Well, you could start off today by eating a big salad a day with olive oil on it as a salad dressing. Or you could purchase a salad dressing that's already made up and it has olive oil as its base. That'd be good.
Okay.
But the key is you've got to get the body moving. The heart is probably the easiest organ system to heal and repair. That's my opinion. Because it's just so agreeable. It just wants to heal. And so if you go outside and go for a short walk today, what's going to happen to you?
I'm definitely going to feel better. I try to exercise at the Y 3 days a week.
Good. I like it. When you say the Y, that means you live in Anderson County, isn't it?
Yes, I live in Palestine, yes.
I'm not going to hold that against you. I don't think anybody else has a YMCA around here, do they?
I really don't. I've never thought about it. I don't think so.
There's a lot of really cool people that go there to work out.
Yes, and their silver sneakers at 9 o'clock in the mornings is really good 5 days a week. So.
Yeah, are you going to go this morning?
Well, no, they don't. They only have it Monday through Friday. And I can only go Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday to silver sneakers because we keep our great-grandson on Mondays and Tuesdays.
So. Well, what do they have today? Is it bronze sneakers? Bronze sneaker Saturday?
Well, you can go to the weight room.
No, I'm just joking.
Yeah, I do that.
Okay, so these are some of the ways through this. And so if you kind of wrap your mind or your head around the idea that what I eat makes a huge difference on my kidneys, usually I'm trying to get the old... See, if I had your labs in front of me, I'd look at them and say, okay, this is a course of action right here. But you're trying to get your body to adapt. And so the kidneys, they've got to have more blood flow and they've got to have more circulation because... The more that you move and exercise, you get more passes of oxygen and nutrients and albumin and creatinine and all that stuff. You get all those things that go through the kidneys. And so your blood, that's what carries an ocean of nutrients and oxygen to your kidneys. But you just can't have 200 gallons a day go through the kidneys. You need more like 2,000, 2,500 gallons of blood a day. The more blood that goes through the kidneys, meaning circulation and movement, the better the kidneys respond.
Okay.
But I use what are called kidney protomorphogens. They're made from calf kidneys because these are proteins that when you swallow them, they tell your kidneys, we need you to heal faster and work better. So in my mind, a kidney protomorphogen is like genius. It's one of the things that you can do simply and cheaply to target the kidneys toward healing and repair. And I'd say another group of people, they just have so much oxalic acid in their kidneys, we're trying to cut that stuff out or get it out. And the way that you do that is by not eating so many nuts and spinach and probably white potatoes.
Okay. No nuts, spinach, or white potatoes.
The big ones are going to be almonds, and you're going to probably have I really don't know where pistachios fall in the mix. Keith was telling me about pistachios yesterday, helping him sleep at night. Of course, you know what? I like it when people tell me that stuff. I really do. I always want to get a person's feedback. So if a man comes to me, this man's name was Keith. You don't know who he is. He's super, super, he's like the happiest man I've ever met before. He's like constantly smiling. But he was just saying, hey, Dr. Morgan, when I eat pistachios at night, they help me sleep better than any other thing I've ever tried. I'm going, really? Good to know.
Right.
How's that for a sleep aid? Yeah. Yes, sir. I'm here at Walgreens. I'm here for my prescription of pistachios.
Well, I do like pistachios, but I haven't eaten any in a long time.
Oh, they're awesome. They are spectacular.
Yeah.
I wonder how much Walgreens charges for pistachio prescription.
Yeah, right. Oh, goodness. Well, if they knew they could do it, they would figure out a way.
Oh, I'm only joking about that.
I know.
Remember what Hippocrates said? He said, let thy medicine be thy food, and let thy food be thy medicine. Boy, right. Did he hit the nail on the head with that one. So what you eat is going to either heal your body, or it's going to hurt it. Simple as that.
Right.
I mean, what did your heart doctor tell you to eat for your heart? What did your heart doctor say?
Well, originally, you know, they told me to, you know, get enough protein. You know, I was actually being prepped for a heart transplant about a year and a half two years ago.
Well, if your ejection fraction's at 10, I can see why.
Yeah, it was way low, but I had, you know, really bad AFib and different stuff.
Your heart.
And I've actually got a pacemaker with a
defibrillator.
And so, yeah. Yep, I have all the above. But
well, I do think you have to be careful with your intake of protein. I don't think you can just say, "Hey, I'm going to go strict carnivore diet." If the kidneys were up to speed, I'd probably say more of a carnivore diet would help heal the heart very quickly. Because what you got to do is you got to get insulin levels down as quick as possible. That's where fasting is going to do something that there's no drug on earth that can do. And it's free.
Yeah, and that's something I don't do is fast.
Well, study it and see what you come up with. See if it sounds like something that you'd be willing to try.
Oh, I'm willing to try it, yes. Well, what about me making an appointment with you and you seeing all?
Well, that's the way that I could. That's the way that I could really help you, because if you brought your labs and I could say, okay, now I have a clear picture of what's going on. And you know what? If you have labs, talk about a benefit. You make it so easy for your do your doctor go over, do they go over the labs with you and explain what all the numbers mean?
No, here last week when I went, she just said, you know, you're on the high normal of potassium because the Entrestor that I take for my heart failure, it raises up the potassium level. So they, you know, that's kind of a borderline thing. She said you're on high normal.
I guess we'll find out if what she said is correct or not.
Yeah, and you know, I get to see it, you know, on my phone because on the my chart type thing. I have, you know, all the readout of everything.
Perfect.
But surely
there's got to be more than just high potassium. But if that's the only thing that's out of whack, that's fine by me.
Well,
easier to fix.
There's other things, you know. There's
okay.
other things out of whack. So,
I
would love to come in, make an appointment, and see what you say.
Well, I'll be glad to help you.
Just call your office.
Yes. Would you like my phone number?
Yes, please.
903. 586.
Yep.
8114.
Okay.
And I'll be glad to help you.
All right, I'll give them.
Yes,
a call,
ma'am.
Monday morning.
Okay, thank you very, very much, ma'am.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Bye bye. Okay, not trying to be harsh. I'm just telling you how it is. So if we were winning the war against heart disease, I mean, wouldn't there be some proof that fewer people are on drugs, and there's fewer heart ablations, and there's less heart transplants, and people are becoming healthier? But it just doesn't seem to be that way. I mean, you don't have to be a genius to understand that the number one cause of death in America is going to be like heart disease. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks. Thanks for your call.
You're welcome. You can just tell me, I know you're about out of time, but I was just going to tell you that you can just tell me what to do. I have a deep ridge in one of my fingernails that I've had for about 6 to 9 months, and it's, sometimes I've gotten them and they go away, but this one has not.
Is it discolored at all?
Nope.
Which finger is it? Is it the ring finger?
It's the middle finger on the right hand.
Well, if it's the middle finger on the right hand, that's your liver.
Oh, okay.
So what it may be doing is it may be giving us a tell or a harbinger of, you know, information that maybe something's going on. Now, just because I say that doesn't make it so, but when you have like a deep ridge in the middle finger, that makes me think something's affecting the blood. And so my mind tends to go either the liver or kidneys, but usually when that, I mean, are you taking any medications of any kind?
I am not. I was on a cholesterol medicine, and I just quit taking it.
Was that recently?
No, probably about a year. I haven't taken cholesterol medicine.
But how long has this ridge been there on your middle finger?
It just started about six to nine months ago.
Do you by chance wake up wide awake at somewhere between 12 and 3 a.m.?
Uh-huh.
That's your liver talking.
And so
what we may want to do is, and there's a lot of ways you can do this, so can I just give you the simple thing since we just have a little bit of time?
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of an herbal tea called dandelion root tea?
Yes, it tastes like dirt.
You are making a very astute observation. I can't argue with that logic. It does.
Yes,
but it's definitely in the category of, this is better be good for me because it tastes like dirt.
That's right.
So what you could do is
I ever eat dirt, but I mean, I did when I was a kid one time. You got to
wait a second. Look at those fingernails one more time. How much dirt is under?
yeah, really.
Okay, so you can drink dandelion root tea. That's very good for the liver, and it's very, very gentle too. I don't think I've had a person say, "Dr. Morgan, my body collapsed. I had to go to the ER last night. They did a body transplant because of dandelion root tea." Of course not.
That's true.
So if you were to add, say, lemon juice, as in fresh lemon juice, to the dandelion root tea, that'd be just fine.
Okay.
But you're trying... Lemon juice is a solvent.
I do drink lemon water every day. I mean, I take a half a lemon and squeeze it into my water. I do drink that every day. I've done that for about probably 6 months.
You must be rich.
Well,
you know what the man told me this week? He said, guess how much I used to pay for lemons in a crate for my restaurant last year? I said, how much? He said, $18. He said, guess how much they are now? I said, I have no idea. He said, $75. So I'm going, man, you need a lemon plantation, don't you? The price of lemons has gone up, evidently.
Of course, like everything else.
Like everything else. Well said. And so, do you know what milk thistle is?
I do, but I don't know how.
It may not hurt for you to take milk thistle. Actually, it may be very beneficial if you had dandelion root tea every day, continue with a lemon, and take milk thistle and see if that has enough healing potential to kind of help correct this middle fingernail and make it go away.
Okay, milk thistle is what?
It's an herb. I'm sorry. Yes, it can be. It's an herb. It can come every, and actually, they're growing like crazy up and down the side of the road. There are all the ditches. There's thistle everywhere. And if you don't believe me, the thistles are sharp. I'll poke you with one of them and we'll find out what you say.
I know what it is. Okay.
Yes, but you could take milk thistle as a supplement, whether it's capsule or tablet or a liquid form, or you could even drink milk thistle tea.
Okay.
That's actually what they do. It's called mother's milk tea. Guess what it contains? Milk thistle. Why do you think they call it milk thistle? Because it cleans up the liver where the mama's milk is more delicious to the baby.
Correct.
Anyway, we're out of time. Sorry about that.
Hey.
All right.
Hey. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks a bunch. Bye-bye.
Bye.